This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived in Tel Aviv Sunday on another Middle East tour to push for a ceasefire in Gaza, but Hamas terrorists raised doubts about the mission just hours after he landed by accusing Israel of undermining his efforts. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Sunday Israel is engaged in complex negotiations for the return of its hostages held in Gaza, but also has principles to uphold that are vital for its security. On his 10th trip to the region since the war began in October, Blinken is meeting the senior Israeli leaders, including Netanyahu, a senior State Department official. Dr. Blinken will continue on to Egypt. The Ukrainian invasion of Russia's Kursk region continues. Reuters' Lucy Fielder has more.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Saturday his troops had strengthened positions in Russia's Kursk region nearly 2 weeks into their incursion. He called for bold decisions by Kyiv's allies to allow long-range strikes. Ukraine says it has seized more than 80 settlements over 444 square miles. Against the backdrop of that incursion, Belarus's president, a staunch ally of Russia's Vladimir Putin, spoke of a tense standoff along his country's border with Ukraine on Sunday. President Alexander Lukashenko said Ukraine had stationed more than 120,000 troops along that border, and Minsk had deployed nearly a third of its armed forces there.
Reuters' Lucy Fielder. China's Coast Guard has accused the Philippines of deliberately crashing one of its ships into a Chinese vessel near Sabina Shoal, a new flashpoint in the territorial disputes in the South China Sea. This is VOA News. Health officials say that Sudan has been stricken by a cholera outbreak that has killed nearly two dozen people and sickened hundreds more in recent weeks. The African nation has been roiled by a 16-month conflict and devastating floods. The health minister said in a statement Sunday that at least 22 people have died from the disease and that at least 354 confirmed cases of cholera have been detected across the country in recent weeks. Venezuelans across the world responded to a call from their country's political opposition. They have taken to the streets to defend the faction's claim to victory over President Nicolas Maduro in last month's disputed presidential election. The demonstrations in Caracas, Tokyo, Sydney, Mexico City, and several other cities were an effort by the main opposition coalition to make visible what they say and insist is a real outcome of the election. They call on government to throw their support behind candidate Edmundo Gonzalez and express support to Venezuelans who are in their home country, fearful of speaking against Maduro and his allies amid a brutal repression campaign. U.S. and South Korean troops have kicked off a large-scale exercise aimed at strengthening their combined defense capabilities against nuclear-armed North Korea, which again is accusing the allies of practicing an invasion. Details from VOA's Joe Ramsey.
The annual summertime exercise that began on Monday comes amid heightened tensions on the Korean Peninsula as the pace of both North Korea's weapons demonstrations and U.S.-South Korea combined military exercises have intensified. The exercise began hours after North Korea's foreign ministry issued a statement accusing the allies of staging what it called provocative war drills for aggression. It added the North's nuclear ambitions are crucial to maintaining the balance of power and preventing a war by, quote, stockpiling the greatest deterrence. Joe Ramsey, VOA News, Washington.
Tropical storm Ernesto is sending powerful swells and rip currents up the U.S. East Coast, and the former hurricane will continue to do so as it keeps moving north Monday.
The East Coast feeling the effects of Ernesto flip-flopping between hurricane and tropical storm, bringing rip currents and high surf. In Bermuda, where power is coming back, Lyndon Rayner with the government's disaster risk reduction and mitigation team says so far no major damage reported.
We have survived Hurricane Ernesto, and so now all efforts are being made to have the island return to some form of normalcy.
The National Hurricane Center says Ernesto's not done with us yet. As it travels toward Newfoundland, it will continue bringing rip currents and high surf. Julie Walker, New York.
And I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Monday, August 19th, and here are some of the stories we are following. Zimbabwe defends its human rights record and praises the just-concluded SADC summit.
I want you to always remember that as a people, we value, we respect, we put in place legislation to support the freedom of our people.
But an analyst called SADC a toothless regional grouping. Seventh-day Adventist Church youth march in Johannesburg to encourage immigrants to refrain from committing crimes. Rwandan President Paul Kagame swears in his new cabinet today, Monday. Former Malawian President Alpha Peter Mutharika is endorsed by his party for the 2025 election.
I think it's very reassuring that the party decided to elect me and oppose. And I think our supporters feel that I'm the right person to go at it again against these people who took our government.
And in the U.S., the Democratic Party convention begins this week in Chicago amid momentum for Vice President Kamala Harris. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's Minister of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services says its country respects human rights in line with its constitution and international law. Zimbabwe hosted the 44th Ordinary Summit of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, over the weekend. Human rights groups criticized the government for arresting and jailing its critics and called on SADC to condemn the alleged violations. Information Minister Jan van Muswere tells VOA that the summit was successful.
The 44th SADC summit has been very successful, given that the re-engagement and engagement strategy, which has been championed by the chief diplomat, His Excellency President Ibi Mnangagwa, has redefined Zimbabwe as the paragon, the conical tower in terms of international relations, in that the Western has also underlined the importance of an inclusive approach under the leadership of the current chair, His Excellency President Ibi Mnangagwa, in that an inclusive approach to economic development in the region, the SADC industrialization plan will be accelerated, and the whole of SADC approach will be implemented in order to ensure that we get peace and security, peace and tranquility, and that the region will be in terms of unity. So this has been a very, very successful summit under the leadership currently of the new chair, President Ibi.
Critics of your government say SADC failed to address the human rights issue, which many organizations made before the meeting started, that SADC did not address the arrest of opposition or critics of the government.
James, we respect human rights in terms of the Constitution and in terms of international law. And you need to have the historical background related to human rights, the history of human rights in Africa, in the history related to the right to self-determination, the history related to the emancipation and the liberation of African people, that we are our own liberator. We work together as African people, in addition to progressive countries and individuals who contributed so much to the independence and to the freedom that we enjoy in the African continent. And I want you to know and to take note fundamentally of the importance related to the institutionalization and to the capacitation and organization in terms of defending human rights that we have done as African people. And if we were to refer to Zimbabwe, that we have constitutional obligation to respect human rights and that we do it for our own good, not our own liberation. We came up with all these legal and organizational and institutional frameworks to ensure that we guarantee the freedom that we currently enjoy. I want you to always remember that as a people, we value, we respect, we put in place legislation to support the freedom of our people, and we respect human rights.
Jan van Muswere is Zimbabwe's Minister of Information, Publicity and Broadcasting Services. He was speaking with me from the capital, Harare. A Zimbabwean political analyst says the Southern African Development Community, SADC, is a toothless regional grouping that cares very little about its citizens. SADC leaders held their 44th ordinary summit in Zimbabwe's capital over the weekend. Rights groups had hoped that SADC would criticize Harare for its human rights record. Instead, the leaders made no mention of it in their final communique, as President Emmerson Mnangagwa assumed the chairmanship. Tendai Ruby Bofana is a Zimbabwe political analyst. He tells me the leaders proved that SADC is nothing more than a leaders' club.
It's the same hot air talking by these Southern African leaders, but with nothing of substance truly coming out of these talks. We have now come to expect SADC to be nothing more than a talk shop where these leaders just have an opportunity to meet, dine, wine on the most expensive food and drink, and then just talk about nothing, really, making promises that they never have any intention of fulfilling. After that, they just go around, you know, touring, sightseeing. The next thing, bye-bye, bye-bye, they're on their planes and they're back home. But we, as the people of Zimbabwe, we then question ourselves, why did our government spend so much money building expensive high-end villas for these heads of state to stay in? And interestingly, James, they never got a chance to stay in them because they have not been finished. We have seen so many human rights activists and opposition supporters being arrested, jailed, denied their constitutional right to bail on flimsy, unverified, unsubstantiated claims of them planning to organize chaos during the SADC summit. But did the regional leaders raise any alarm? Did they even utter a single word of condemnation over these arrests? Nothing.
Tendai Ruben Bofana is a Zimbabwean political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. Former Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika says if he is elected in 2025, his priority will be to fix the economy by cutting spending and reducing the country's debt. Mutharika was president from 2014 to 2020 before, according to him, he was removed by a judicial coup. His Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, chose him unopposed over the weekend as its candidate for the 2025 election. Mutharika tells me that he is the right person to reclaim the government from the people who, he said, took it away from Malawians.
I think it's very reassuring that the party decided to elect me unopposed. But as you know, in 2020, it really wasn't a defeat because I won the election, but the court nullified it. You remember we have discussed all this before, on purely spurious ground. So it really wasn't a defeat. I think everyone knew that that would be one of the greatest injustices in the history of jurisprudence. I think I'm vindicated, and I think our supporters feel that I'm the right person to go at it again against these people who took our government. So I feel vindicated, and of course, I feel happy and grateful that the people have shown this confidence in me.
You have criticized President Chakwera, saying that we have a president, but we lack leadership. His supporters would say the president has been doing very well fighting corruption.
Fighting corruption? You see, they can't be shared. So we heard of the SATA scandal involving a businessman over Malawi origin, where 48 people were implicated in this government, with some very senior people in the cabinet, and not a single person was indicted. Fighting corruption, this government is a job, because it's the opposite. They even tried to arrest the director of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, and then after that, they decided to not renew her contract, because she was a thorn in their flesh. So no, there's no fighting against corruption at all.
You said the president is not managing the economy properly. What would you do that would be different from what the president is currently doing?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, cut spending, for example. The fiscal side of the economy, we need to cut spending and reduce this huge debt, which is now about, has 19 trillion, about six times what it was when I left the government. and they need to cut spending, and they need to cut traveling. And the president has traveled over, I think, 60 times. Right now, he was in Mozambique, Zimbabwe. He's now going to Rome and then Germany. I traveled only 18 times in 6 years. He has traveled over 60 times in 3 years. That's completely irresponsible.
That was former Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, August 19th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Ahead on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Rwandan President Paul Kagame's new cabinet is being sworn in today, Monday. Kagame won his 4-5-year term last month with 99.15% of the vote over his two opponents. Political analyst Mutuyeyezu Oswal tells me that the 30-member cabinet is made up mostly of ministers from Kagame's previous government.
I can say that it's not even new, because only three new faces can be seen in it. Because before the electoral campaign, the president had reshuffled the cabinet, so we were not expecting so many changes. And that's what happened. Only three new faces: Prudence Sebahinzi, the Minister of Commerce and Industry. Another new face is Christine Mukinga, the Minister of Labour. And another new face is Richard Nyirishema, Minister of Sports. Only those new faces.
How big is the cabinet? I mean, how many members?
There are 30, 20 men and 10 women.
You said this cabinet includes people from the previous government. What does this say about President Kagame in terms of what kind of policies he wants to put in place? The fact that this cabinet doesn't seem to be that much different from the last government.
He didn't change it radically because he had reshuffled it before the kickoff of the presidential electoral campaign. He had reshuffled it 2 months ago. We were not expecting so many new faces in it, and that's what happened. The policies, you see how you can find it. It's a government made of technicians. We can call it a technocrat government that is going to help him achieve the manifesto of RPF and his own manifesto, what he promised people during the electoral campaign, that poverty is going to be reduced to less than 15%. Stunting among under 5-year children should come under 13%. Infrastructure, so many roads are going to be built and others rehabilitated. The Bugesera International Airport is going to be inaugurated. And so many things he really needed. Technicians, those ministers who studied a lot, young ministers who will work with energy to help him achieve his manifesto.
Mutuyeyezu Oswal is a political analyst. He was speaking with us from the Rwandan capital, Kigali. Young people from the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Johannesburg marched on Sunday in immigrant-populated areas, calling for the end to crime and drug abuse. The march took place at a time when authorities are upping the pressure illegal immigrants and those working without permits and committing crimes. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The youths who were dressed in their church regalia and beating drums to attract attention marched from one street to another, urging residents to join them in fighting drug abuse. The marchers carried huge banners with messages like "No to drugs, drugs kill." Vincent Mawire, a leader of the young marchers, expressed frustration with the high number of youths now addicted to drugs such as tick, nyaope, cocaine and others.
Our wish and our prayer to the society, we want them to change and say no to drugs, and they have to quit and start a new life so that we might have good leaders for tomorrow.
Johannesburg's central suburbs of Hillbrow, Berea and Yuvel, where the march took place, are known for their high rate of crime and drugs. The ills are often blamed on foreign nationals who are dominant in these areas. But Sehlule Ncube, a youngster, disputes the allegation.
Everyone is not immune to doing crime. So let us come together and do what is right in the eyes of God. You are a foreigner, you are a local. If it's crime, it's crime.
Another youth, Ryan Mlalazi, called for urgent intervention.
We need to encourage our leaders to address the roots and causes of drug abuse, build strong, supportive communities that promote health choices. Let's break the silence and stigma surrounding Nyaupe. There is help available.
In his recent State of the Province address, Gauteng Province Premier Panyaza Lesufi admitted the province was under siege by criminals and vowed to root them out.
Crime is ravaging us. We're even scared of our own shadows. Our own houses have turned to be prisons. We can't even go out to enjoy our parks. We can't even go to enjoy a movie at night because we are scared of criminals.
Since the establishment of the Government of National Unity in South Africa, locals have been vocal about the high number of immigrants in South Africa. Their complaints have been followed by increased raids by police, Home Affairs and Labour, resulting in arrests of many undocumented immigrants. However, recent surveys and government reports have disputed assertions that immigrants dominate in crime committed in South Africa. An analysis of government data done by the Institute of Security Studies in 2002 revealed that undocumented immigrants contributed to less than 3% of people who were in South African prisons from 2017 to 2021. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In the U.S. presidential election, thousands of Democratic Party delegates this week will celebrate Vice President Kamala Harris and the Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as their presidential ticket for 2024. They are gathering in the Midwestern city of Chicago. VOA senior Washington correspondent Caroline Presutti takes a look at some volatile confrontations from past conventions and how support for the party's candidate has grown since President Joe Biden dropped out of the race.
Chicago, 1968. Violence outside the Democratic National Convention between police and Vietnam War protesters. TV, still a relatively new medium, showing the conflicts live. New York City, 1976. The last time the Democratic Party would announce its vice presidential candidate at the convention, with presidential candidate Jimmy Carter choosing Walter Mondale.
We have that vision, we love our country, and we're going to do our job. Thank you very much.
Chaos at the next convention in 1980, when Senator Ted Kennedy challenged President Carter's re-election. Kennedy would concede to Carter in a famous speech that ended with this line.
The cause endures, the hope still lives, and the dream shall never die.
Back to Chicago, 1996, and...
Pass the check! Pass the check! Pass the check!
Civil rights protesters demanding racial equality and welfare reform. Police keeping the crowds from entering the security perimeter. Denver, 2008. Barack Obama's acceptance speech moved to an outdoor stadium to accommodate the convention record crowd of 84,000.
With profound gratitude and great humility, I accept your nomination for presidency of the United States.
This week in Chicago, Vice President Kamala Harris and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz begin their party's convention with some momentum. Last month, President Joe Biden was trailing Republican candidate Donald Trump in political polls. Since Biden dropped out, candidate Harris has risen in those polls. Last week's morning consult survey showing her 3 points ahead of Trump. although it remains a tight race. There will be protesters, as there always are at conventions, like these from last month's Republican gathering held in neighboring Wisconsin. Meeting them in Chicago will be thousands of federal, state, and local police officers. Derek Mayer is the U.S. Secret Service Deputy Special Agent in charge for the Democratic Convention.
I'm confident that our plan will provide a safe and secure environment during the DNC.
Chicago officials expect as many as 50,000 out-of-town visitors for the convention, with the city's United Center hosting the Democratic Party events. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport in Australia, where South Africa's Dricus du Plessis made a successful first defense of his mixed martial art UFC middleweight title when he defeated two-time former champion Nigeria-born New Zealander Israel Adesanya by submission in the main event of the UFC 305 held at the RAC Arena in Perth, Australia on Sunday. Through three rounds, Adesanya was a superior striker and appeared to be taking control of the fight, but a flurry of strikes from du Plessis allowed him to secure a takedown on the Nigerian-born last airbender and sink in a rear neck choke, forcing a tap out at 3 minutes 38 seconds of the fourth round. It was the first all-African title bout in UFC history. After the fight, du Plessis gave Adesanya his jacket, which is embroidered with a South African flag as a show of respect.
This man has done so much for this sport, and I'm really sorry that it came across that I disrespected the fact that he's from Africa. It was never my intention. No, tonight Africa would have won regardless. But tonight South Africa was the victor. It was an honor for me.
And now to football, where the first leg matches of the preliminary round in the CAF Interclub competitions took place at the weekend and showcased intense team efforts and fierce rivalries. Both competitions were marked by significant rivalry and enthusiasm, with clubs aspiring to continue their journey towards continental glory and fulfill the dream of clinching the African title. In the CAF Champions League, Commercial Bank of Ethiopia earned a 2-1 victory on the road against Burundi's FC Vitalo. Namibia's Africa Stars also claimed a 1-0 win over Gaborone Galaxy of Botswana. Raja Casablanca defeated Grade National 2-1 in Niger in the CAF Confederations Cup. The match between Alias Fort and Black Bulls Maputo ended 7-0. Meanwhile, the match between Union Toraga and Racing Abidjan ended in a goalless draw. CS Constantine triumphed over Rwandan club Police FC with a 2-0 victory at the Shahid Hamaloy Stadium in Constantine. And now to basketball. The 2026 FIBA Women's World Cup pre-qualifiers in Kigali, Rwanda is scheduled for August 19th to the 25th. A tournament will see 8 countries compete in Group C and D, with the goal of advancing to the World Cup's main qualifying tournament that will take place in March 2026. In Group D, Great Britain, Argentina, Rwanda, and Lebanon will square it out. Group C comprises Hungary, Senegal, Brazil, and the Philippines. Kigali will host the pre-qualifiers for both Group C and D. The two top teams from each group will advance to the semifinals, with the winners of each group securing a place in the main qualifying tournament. And now to rugby, where Ugandan Rugby Union, through its disciplinary committee, has suspended Ivan Magomu for 6 months and stripped him of his Rugby Cranes national team captaincy. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, August 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.